Well, thank you guys so much for being here tonight as well. I had a great time with you this morning, and good to talk to so many of you afterwards and to share your stories and your perspectives and the things that you've learned over the years. And I always appreciate getting to talk with others that have wisdom to share. And so thank you for that. This morning we kind of covered exhaustively the fact that the parents are the primary responsibility, right? We kind of covered that one. But tonight we want to talk about how the rest of the church can influence and really build the faith of this next generation. And so whether you're a youth group or a youth minister or an adopted grandparent or a regular grandparent or an aunt and uncle or a sibling or a cousin, we all have things that we can do to reach out and to build the faith of those around us. One of the tendencies I noticed, though, within the church is that a lot of times the same group of children or the same teens or the same college students tend to get all the attention, right? And it's usually, oh, this is my friend's daughter or my friend's granddaughter, and we love on them and we care for them. But one of the most important things is not everybody has parents that are faithful. Not everybody has parents that are willing to impart faith to them. And so as a church, it's important for us to notice and to say, okay, I want to spend some extra time getting to know so-and-so and figuring out who they are and what they're about. The church has so much to offer. In 1 Corinthians chapter 3, and starting in verse 6, it says this: I planted the seed, Apollos watered it, but God has been making it grow. So neither the one who plants nor the one who waters is anything, but only God who makes things grow. The one who plants and the one who waters have one purpose, and they will each be rewarded according to their own labor. For we are co-workers in God's service. You are God's field, God's building. So who contributes to raising this generation of faith? We have in this scripture, we see Paul and who else? Okay, Apollos. Within this church, who contributes to raising this generation of faith? Everyone, right? All right, and so everyone pitches in, but we know that the growth comes from who? The growth comes from God. We pitch in where we can, but the growth comes from God. So sometimes we might be one of the best people to invite someone to church or to invite someone into a faith relationship. But someone else might be the best one to make a connection. One of the things that is great to notice is the differences between the strengths and weaknesses between you and others. My wife is great at one-on-one conversations, and it's a strength of hers. I do better in a group than she does. And so we recognize there's a strength and weakness there. And it's wonderful when we get a chance to complement each other's weaknesses. And within the church, do we do that? Within the church, do we recognize the strengths and weaknesses that others have? So whether it's doing a Bible study or just being kind and invitational, the church has a lot to offer. And one plants and another one may water. In Luke chapter 2, we're going to read verses 40 through 56. There's an interesting encounter here with Jesus. As he's growing in stature and faith, we notice something about his life. It says, "And the child grew and became strong. He was filled with wisdom, and the grace of God was on him. Every year, Jesus' parents went to Jerusalem for the festival of the Passover. When he was 12 years old, they went up to the festival according to the custom. After the festival was over, while his parents were returning home, the boy Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem, but they were unaware of it, thinking he was in their company. They traveled on for a day, and then they began looking for him among relatives and friends. When they did not find him, they went back to Jerusalem to look for him. After 3 days, they found him in the temple courts, sitting among the teachers, listening to them and asking them questions. Everyone who heard him was amazed at his understanding and his answers. When his parents saw him, they were astonished. His mother said to him, 'Son, why have you treated us like this? Your father and I have been anxiously searching for you.' 'Why were you searching for me?' he asked. Didn't you know I had to be in my Father's house? Man, smart aleck answer right there. Says, but they did not understand what he was saying to them. Then Jesus went down to Nazareth with them and was obedient to them. But his mother treasured all these things in her heart. And Jesus grew in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man. When we look at this passage, sometimes we incorrectly assume that Jesus didn't need mentors. Did Mary and Joseph teach Jesus? Yeah. Did Jesus learn here at the temple courts? Yeah. Why was Jesus with his relatives? It's you know, we kind of look at this, and for those of you parents who are maybe feeling a little beat up today, Mary and Joseph lost the Savior of the world for a few days. So, I mean, it is one of those situations where if you're feeling like, okay, at least I've never lost the Savior of the world before, you can feel good about that. And Mary and Joseph, though, what do you think that they're thinking at this moment? What kind of feelings are going through their thoughts? What kind of feelings and thoughts do they have? Is it panic? Yeah. We've lost our keys before, and that can even be a panic. But to lose Jesus is probably an even bigger panic. And Jesus' response back is what? Yeah, did you not know that I had to be in my Father's house? I had to. Why does he have to be there? Because he's going to be about his Father's business. Why does Mary and Joseph assume that he's with relatives? Because they know that an extended family is needed to raise Jesus to be the man of God that God is expecting, right? They know that an extended family is needed. And so Jesus can't learn everything he needs to learn from two people. Okay, so if that's the case, what about your children? Do you think that everything they need to know in the world, they can learn from you? All right, we kind of know that, right? If Jesus needed some extra influences, then obviously we do as well. And our kids do as well. And so we have to depend on an extended family to see what's going on. One of the things that we have tried to do at our church over the last few years is our theme has been bridging the generations. And we have, in Florida, we kind of have a large generational gap sometimes. We have a large amount of old people, and then we have a large amount of young people. And sometimes it's difficult because you have different interests. But over the last year, we've done some really neat things to bridge the generations. We had a chicken and dumplings night with a lady named Lorena Bowers. And she makes the best chicken and dumplings that I've ever had in my life. And our teens all went over to Lorena Bowers' house, and she made chicken and dumplings and gave them dating advice. Do you think that would be a pretty interesting night out? In fact, her stories, sometimes I question whether they're true or not, because apparently she dated Eddie Arnold, I believe. I'm not too big into country music, so I don't know if I got that one right. She used to babysit Elvis. And the stories that she would tell were just incredible. And she told those young women, you need to respect yourself. And if a man tries to do something, you just haul off and hit him. And to sit in front of a 94-year-old woman and share her life experience with us, what a valuable thing that is. Do we need more of that in the church? Yes. Those are some of the best stories. A year and a half ago, we combined our parents and teens class. And on a weekly basis, if you come to Northwest, you'll see parents and teens in the same class on Sunday morning. And Wednesday night's just a teens class. We have lots of fun events. But we thought one time a week we would like to have parents and teens together so that they can hear the same lesson and maybe talk about it a little bit at home. We don't make them sit next to each other. You know, sometimes that could be. But we just want them to have one faith experience in common each week. And it leads to more conversation. St. Pete, if you don't know this, has the largest shuffleboard arena in the world. And I know you're thinking, wait, did he say shuffleboard arena? Yes, there is a grandstand for shuffleboard where you can fit about 150 people to watch 10 courts of shuffleboard in St. Pete. And, you know, it was made in the 1920s, and let's just say that it gets some use on Friday night from a pretty young crowd, but I don't think there's any grandstand watching shuffleboard that is that exciting. But we had a shuffleboard tournament. We had 150 people come out and compete in a shuffleboard tournament. And not only young, but old, and everybody could be involved. And it was one of those experiences where, you know, old people were talking trash to young people, and it was an experience. And they were, it was competitive, and they need that. It's this bridging the generations that is sometimes really important. We have had some other things like a family movie night, church-wide devotional at the beach, and we've done a lot of things within our church to bridge those generations. But we see this within the life of Jesus, when Mary and Joseph expect for other relatives to contribute to the life of Jesus. Now, sometimes when we do these seminars, people can take the parent side too far. And that's why sometimes we want to talk about this on Sunday night. More is needed than just parents to raise a generation of faith. The church is essential to raising that generation of faith. I'd like to share a video with you. And it's from a young man that was part of our youth group. And he had zero church experience. And what ended up happening is he was invited through one of the youth group kids who actually began coming without his parents. And this young man's name is Greg. And he has a journey to faith that involves everyone in our church.
I was first exposed to God in ninth grade when I moved to Alabama, and then I got baptized, but then I stopped going to church. I moved here at the end of my 10th grade year. In junior year, I start coming to some of the youth hangout events that we have here, and still wasn't really going to church yet. Didn't really want to then, and it wasn't until the first youth trip I believe I went on was high school retreat. And I still wasn't really going on, but I was having a lot of fun and I liked a lot of the people here. And it wasn't until the summer when we got our youth interns that I really started taking steps to taking it more seriously. Actually, one of the interns kind of yelled at me, and it's probably why the reason I started taking it more seriously. I started reading my Bible, and it wasn't more the fact that I didn't believe in God. I was kind of making it benefit me because I didn't really read and I didn't really know. And so once I started reading, I was like, clearly says you're not supposed to do this, you're not supposed to do that. And so I'd start taking that road and trying to live the life out.
Well, my dad, he was raised Christian, but it feels like he kind of strayed from the path. Because I don't really remember him bringing it up when I came and lived with him. And in eighth grade, I lived with him. And we ended up moving to where he grew up. There's this little plot of land on the farm, pretty much. And there was a church there. And he made me go, but we never really discussed what we talked about. So it was kind of like, you're making me go to this. It lasts forever. I don't even care or know what they're talking about. And so I didn't really get it. And my stepdad, he wasn't Christian at all. And when I lived with him and my mom, when we lived in Las Vegas, I didn't know who Christ was. I mean, I've heard of Christ, but I kind of thought it was a myth, so. I think if me and my dad would have talked more about church, it probably would have got me to grasp a little more, a better understanding of who Christ was and what's God's plan for us and the Word. Because at the church that he lived on growing up, we were reading the King James versions of the Bible. So you can kind of see how that I would have a problem trying to understand that by myself. And especially since I didn't really understand the whole church thing yet anyway. I kind of was like a typical kid and just was like, open the book so no one yells at me. And I didn't really grasp any of it. It would have helped a lot if we spent time and talked afterwards and he tied it into my life or anything. I really wish that I could have grown up in a Christian household and could have understood and been closer to Christ at an earlier age, because my life would have been a lot easier. I don't think any kid should go growing up without knowing Christ or not really understanding the Bible and just thinking this is just a bunch of stories to, it's good guidelines to try to live by, but you know, it's not really anything. I don't think anyone should go without that, because personally, growing up and not knowing Christ and looking back, I just feel like so much sorrow for myself. Like, man, I've made all these decisions that really pained me and my mom and my dad in my life, and if I would have known Christ, I wouldn't have done these things. I would have done this way. I could have gave more to people and offered the world more. The families at church mean a lot to me. They really helped me and helped me come, because coming from a non-Christian home, it's good to come here and be with people who believe the same things I believe in. They really helped me stay strong and know that, you know, it's okay. My family might not be as supportive, but this is a rock. I went to dinner with the family from church, and they sat down. No one ate yet. They passed around the trays of food that they had. They had, like, this spread out, and they were passing it around like something you would do for Thanksgiving, but it was just a normal, regular dinner. And we sat there, and we prayed, and then after we prayed, we start eating, and everyone starts asking questions about their day, and they start asking me what I plan to do with my future and how I was going, and that really impacted me and made me want my family to be like that. Another family Mrs. Thompson, I call her my mother, I really liked her whole household, and I can kind of feel the love that she had. People in the church became my family when I saw, like, in sports, I used to play sports a lot in high school, and you gain this camaraderie with each other by hanging out and doing stuff with each other, and I saw that, but it was deeper. Like, they actually cared about me and were asking about my day, and I could hear in their voice how they wanted me to come do stuff with them and how they wanted me to come to church, and I was like, I feel loved, and so we became a family. A lot of people from the church have helped me grown in my faith. A lot of my peers, by seeing how their example helped me grow. A lot of the elders helped me grow. And just seeing how they live out their lives. My youth minister, he really impacted me in the beginning when I started taking my faith more seriously. I started to see how he just wasn't talking the talk about how he walked it, and it started to rub off on me how I want to be like Christ, but I'm going to start here, and it was like a building block, and that really helped by showing me how you can live out the word and not just talk about it, and it was really a good starting point for me. I really want people in the church to come talk to me that I don't know, because I feel like we can offer each other different viewpoints of how we take certain scriptures, and I really like hearing some of the elders' perspectives on things, and some of them are really cool, and they kind of make me want to be them when I get old or older. I would want an adult to approach me like they respect me and I respect them, and that we both can offer something to each other. And sometimes I like the approach of, hey, I heard you need some help, maybe point me in the direction, and that helps too. And sometimes I just, someone to talk to. It doesn't always have to be like, oh, you need help, let me give you some advice. It could be like, hey, how's this, or how's school? You see that basketball game or something?
because I want them to be my friends, and since we're friends, that's how I talk to my friends. It's not just about impacting people your age group. You have to step out of your comfort zone and go and be with people you're not used to being with. And I just really like people, so it doesn't really matter to me about age or anything like that. I just wanted to be with them.
All right, what do we notice about Greg and the way that he comes to faith? Who contributes to his faith? Everybody, all right. What are some of the examples within the film that we watched? All right, families. And what did the families do? What was significant about the families? All right, being together, the big meal, right? And having this, he thought this was something out of Thanksgiving, and this is just a normal Sunday dinner, I think is what he went to. And he was taken back by what did they do right after they said the prayer? They talked. They asked about each other's day. They were kind to each other. They genuinely wanted to know what was going on. And that was a shock to him. That was mind-blowing to him that families would actually do something like that. Is that important? Is that hard? It's a simple concept called family. And God created the church to be that kind of family. What else did we notice from the video? Who else contributed to Greg's faith? Okay. Okay. The youth minister, which was me, so it's kind of awkward to talk about that. But he talks about how he didn't really know where to start within his Christianity. And so the first example, he could actually picture himself living like I was living, and that was the first step for him. He also talks about one of our youth interns who yelled at him. I wasn't there for that, but it was one of those things that caused him to think more seriously about his faith. All right, and so that was a contributing factor. Who else? All right, I heard one from up back here. If you raise your hand, that would help me out a little bit. His peers. Okay, so his peers and showing him, you know, interest and inviting him to things and being genuinely concerned, and that word camaraderie came out. I heard elders over here. What did the elders do? He called them old. You know, we can forgive him for that. But what else do the elders do? All right, talk to them. They were an example of what he wants his life to be like as he gets older. It gave him a trajectory to say, this is who I want to be in the future. All right, who else? Yeah. Yeah, so the adopted mom. And so he calls her Miss Thompson, and he said, she's like my adopted mother. And I know that she would invite him over for meals, and he would hang out all day at their house. Because Greg was in search of something he didn't have within his life, and that was family. What are his regrets about his life so far? What did he wish would have happened with his dad? All right, we would have known about Christ younger. He says, I would have avoided so much sorrow in my life had I known sooner about God and his love. And, you know, he's been through a lot. I can tell you his family is a rough family. But he found more family within the church. All right, what else did he wish? He said, I wish my dad would have talked about church, explained things to me. So that I would have known what I was going to. That discussion about him and his dad, it points to that inconsistent insistence that we talked about this morning, didn't it? About, you must go to church, but I'm not going to live out anything that you see within church at home. And so we start to get a picture of what is important to Greg and how he comes to faith, and it is each and every person within the church that is able to contribute to who he is. And one of the neat things that happens with Greg is he's at Harding now. He's a junior, and he's studying to be a minister. And you never know at what point the influence that you have or the simple things that you do when they make profound kingdom impact. Because I'm sure Miss Thompson never knew that inviting Greg over to her house a few times on Sunday afternoon for a meal and just to hang out would have caused him to find so much joy and peace in his life. I'm sure the family that invited him out to dinner over to their house for dinner would have never known what it meant to Greg to experience a family meal where they genuinely ask about their day. But this is the discrepancy between Christians and the world today. Is Christians are able to find a genuine family, and the rest of the world is searching desperately for a meaningful family within their life. And so maybe the first conversation in order to raise a generation of faith isn't, let's read these Bible verses and we'll talk about it. Maybe the first conversation is, do you want to be a part of my family? And then when they get to know you, they'll see what it looks like, and those discussions will sometimes come later. With Greg, we see this wide array of things that are happening. And one of the things I would like to do is to look at some of these quotes from this book called Hurt. There's a book called Hurt and Hurt 2.0, and essentially it is a minister who took a year sabbatical, and he spent time with adolescents. And he just spent time listening to them and trying to understand their world because he noticed a few things that he wanted to understand better. And this is, as I read these, I want you guys to pay attention to a few of the lines that stick out to you. So you can tell me what are some of the things that look important within these passages here. It says, on the surface, the adolescent world appears to be relatively stable and healthy. Yet beneath the calm waters presented by positive empirical data, there is turmoil that is difficult, painful, lonely, and even harmful to our young. Even among those who argue that adolescents are basically fine, virtually no one would question the need for young people, and especially adolescents, have for adults who are available, care, and come to them without a hidden or self-centered agenda. The fact is that adolescents need adults to become adults, and when adults are not present and involved in their lives, they are forced to figure out how to survive. What are some of the phrases in here that stand out to you as we read this? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that survival sounds like it's kind of the phrase that stands out to you. And so figuring out how to survive with available adults is tough. Good. Who else? What phrases stand out to you from this? Okay. To become adults. What is the phrase it uses? Adults without a self-centered agenda. And this is what we see a lot of times within the world is if they're at school, what's the most important thing in life? They're in math class. What's the most important thing? Math is the most important subject. You'll never go anywhere without math. By the way, it's not true. You'll never amount to anything without math in your life. And, you know, if you got to get these problems, if you're going to be a success in the world, then that's it. Okay, next period, English. All right, you'll never go anywhere without English. If you don't learn how to read and write, you'll never get a job. And it's the same story in every class. Okay, school's out. Now you go to football practice. Football is the most important thing in your life. If you want to be a professional football player, you need to be here, 24/7 and, doing hurdles. And, and the same thing can happen at church. And so you come to church and youth minister sits down for class. I'm not saying this is what Chris is doing, but it's saying, if you're not here, you're going to hell. And it sometimes can seem like another hidden self-centered agenda that begins to arise within the world. And what they need is people who listen. People who understand, okay, I just want to be here for you. I want to know what's going on in your life. And I'm not going to try to push any agenda upon you. Would that be good? Yeah. I think I saw a hand over here. Yeah. Okay.
Jesus wasn't like that.
Jesus
was a humble person. He associated with everybody's society, not just the high society.
Yeah. So there's no such thing as status within the church, right? We're all one step away from sin, right? We're all broken people who are trying to overcome the brokenness within our life. And so there isn't such a thing as status. And so sometimes we can perceive that. And sometimes it can be us, right? And seeing things that aren't really there. And sometimes it can be things that are there that we need to pay attention to. But we're all on the same level, right? And like Greg said, he said, I want everyone to come talk to me. Young, old, I don't care. And it doesn't always have to be advice. Let's just talk about a football game every now and again or a basketball game so we can get to know each other and we can be friends. What else stands out to you from this this reading? Anything else? Yeah.
I think what stood out to me was in the last sentence it says that they are forced to be
right. All right. What stands out to you about that? That forced feeling. Okay, so if adults don't help, then there's no other option but to figure it out on your own. And that's tough. It's tough within this world, especially because there's a lot of decisions. That's good. All right, so I have a couple more here that we'll read through. And again, same thing. Tell me what you notice. By the time adolescents enter high school, nearly everyone has been subjected to nearly a decade or more of adult-driven and adult-controlled programs, systems, and institutions that are primarily concerned with adult agendas, needs, and dreams. Today, even very young children learn that they are only as valuable as their ability to contribute. Rarely are youth activities, especially group activities, such as sports and dance, safe places that allow children to explore latent potential, develop an appreciation for a sport or activity, or even simply enjoy being involved. What kind of things stand out to you from this one? Okay, again, that word agenda keeps popping up. An adult-driven agenda. Good. I think the one in here that really bothers me is the fact that there's not a safe place anymore sometimes. That there always is, well, if you just worked a little harder, you could be even better than you are now. And sometimes it's okay to be the same amount of good that you are now and just to enjoy it. And to enjoy the fact that I like soccer. I'm not going professional in soccer, but I like it. And unfortunately, sometimes today in that world, that doesn't happen. Anything else that we notice? Yeah. It takes the church to raise a child, is what she said. Definitely. It takes parents and it takes the church to raise a child, that's for sure. One more. This is his conclusion from the matter. He says, I came to two conclusions within the first few weeks of this study. First, the vast majority of adults simply do not comprehend the complex and different world in which nearly all mid-adolescents dwell. Second, most adults fear and in many cases are basically repulsed by what they see within the adolescent world. All right, and when we look at this, there's really two conclusions here. But there's a lack of understanding, and then sometimes there's the lack of a willingness to try. And what I would say to you guys is that, you know, the only way to understand a world is to ask questions and to take an interest in those whose world you don't understand. And if this is going to be a church that raises a generation of faith, they need you to understand who they are, what they're struggling with, and not to be forced to figure it out on their own. And sometimes they have some adults who just shoot the breeze with them and who just kind of talk to them, and have some adults who just listen and some who they may seek advice from. But these are some of the things that are important. There's basically four different, I guess, categories, if you'll let me say that word, of influence that you can have within today's children and today's teens. And the first one would be just the word champion. And the word champion comes from the Middle Ages, at which a knight would be a champion for a king. And essentially what it is, it's a one-sided relationship where the champion puts their support behind a king and expects nothing in return from that king. All right, and within today's world, kids and teens and college students, they need champions. They need people that show up to watch their games and to cheer them on. They need people to just tell them what a wonderful job they're doing or how much you appreciate some of the things that they might be doing, because they need that. They don't get enough of that within their life. Next one is listeners. This is probably the most needed one, and I would say that adults have a lot of wisdom to share. And the older you are, the more wisdom you have to share. But often the wisest thing that you can do within the life of a teen or child is listen. Because you will understand, and just your sheer understanding of what they're going through is more meaningful to them than any advice that you could offer. And so letting them be who they are, understanding who they are, and, you know, maybe encouraging them. So if you are able to listen consistently, then I'd say the next one is the occasional advisor. And if you're a good listener, one of the things that we see happen is you know, children and teens are going to come talk to you. College students are going to come talk to you, and they're going to say, okay, I have this situation within my life, and I'm not really sure what to do. The reason they're asking you is because you've shown an ability to listen and to care within their lives. And that is crucial. But you first have to prove that you can do that. Does that make sense? And then the last one that I see is mentors. And that's a little bit deeper. Mentors are people that have a consistent relationship. It's kind of a more dedicated relationship. They are kind of intertwined with the life of those younger people. And they are leading them to be a genuine disciple of Christ. And so the picture would look something like what Jesus did with his disciples. He wasn't a champion for them, he only encouraged them. He wasn't just a listener of them, where he just sat and listened. And he didn't just give them occasional advice, right? He was a mentor for them. And he took them from people who didn't have much purpose in their life to people that could dedicate their whole life to God and making a difference within God's kingdom so easily. So when we look at our ability to raise a generation of faith, consider those things. Consider the teenage world and the adolescent world that we see, especially because those are some of the most difficult years. And become listeners, become champions, become people that are hesitant to give advice until it's sought out, and become mentors to those who are seeking more within their life and to be more dedicated to God within their life. And within that, we'll do a little bit, but God causes the rest of the growth, doesn't he? God makes up the difference for the lack of wisdom that we may have for them, because we don't always have the answers. And when we realize that and God shows up, it's even better than when we do have the answers. I just want to take a couple minutes and talk about grandparents for a minute, since we probably have several of you here. How many of you are so excited that you're grandparents in this room? All right, I'm sure if I came to you and pulled your phone out, there would be a picture right there on the home screen of your grandchildren, and you are so excited for them in your life. One of the things that sometimes we see is that grandparents are loving, yet distant spiritual advisors within the life of their grandchildren. And, you know, we see a lot of different things, but I would say that you don't have to be as distant within their spiritual life. And there's a few things that we've seen have helped over the years. One is to start young being a spiritual influencer within their life. I can tell you that the difference between starting to share your faith and perspective when they're two years old, it's a lot easier than when they're 18 years old. And so start early, trying to talk to them about what you believe within your faith and about God. Be nosy. I know sometimes you might feel like you are pushing in, but faith is important enough to be nosy about, isn't it? And so be nosy about the faith of your grandchildren. And if you're, you know, you can't make their parents do anything, right? But to be nosy about what they're learning about. And if they're not learning enough about God, to step in and to be that person to support those grandkids. To issue challenges for grandchildren that are teens. And, you know, I had a great relationship with my grandparents. And I can remember having my granddad challenge me on different spiritual things. Or I can remember, you know, he did a lot of just interesting things. And he was one who is well studied in Scripture. And I can tell you, we have a lot of great debates and talks about God's Word with him. So challenge them when they're in the teen years, especially. One of the things that needs to happen within the world of grandparents is sometimes to influence when it's not as easy. We have a set of grandparents at our church who his grandchildren want to learn more about God, but his children have no interest in taking his kids to church or being involved spiritually within his life. And so grandma and granddad have decided that they are going to do whatever they can to influence the life of their grandchildren for God. And so I think every other weekend or so, they have their grandchildren over, and they have a game night, and they have pizza, and they have a really good time, and then they also have a time of Bible study and fellowship, and just kind of it's just kind of relaxed. And they're able to dig into God's Word a little bit and then return right back to the game night and the fun. And that is something that they do intentionally because they know that they're not getting it within their home. And some of the things they also do is interesting because they kind of, I won't use the word manipulate, but they kind of influence the children to bring up faith to their mom and dad. And so one of our grandparents said, you know, I know your dad would really love to pray with you. So when you go home tonight, ask your dad to pray with you. And as this grandpa tells the story, it's just kind of amazing to watch the joy on his face as his grandson went home and said, Dad, will you pray with me? And his dad's kind of taken back and, you know, not sure what to do. And they get down on their knees by the bed because grandpa showed him how to do this. And they begin to pray. And his dad is expecting something simple like, you know, thanks, God, amen. But instead, it was a real prayer. It was something that was significant. It was something that was meaningful. And this dad is, as he's hearing his son pray, he actually is praying second and has to borrow some of the words that his son said while he was praying next to the bed. Because his prayer was deep. And so even within some situations that aren't the easiest to work in, grandparents can have a great influence. And sometimes it just takes a little planning, a little forethought, and the courage to say, okay, this is what I'm going to do. And if your grandparents, that have grandkids other places in the country, there's great tools that you have available. I'm sure you've discovered Skype and some of those kind of things. But use those avenues to have a small faith relationship with your grandkids, if at all possible. So, it's been wonderful being here this weekend with you guys, and I just want to encourage you to keep working with your kids and your families to pass down faith, and keep working as a church to raise a generation of faith. And I think Chris is going to come in and up and offer invitation and close us out this evening.